Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, September 27th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, City. Hotel could be coming to airport. By Stuart Doreen. A new three-star or higher hotel could be coming to Midland International Airport. The Midland City Council will vote today to authorize the advertisement for proposals for the sale of property west of Midland International Terminal and adjacent parking lots. The three lots are specifically located southeast of the intersection of Windecker Street and Sloan Field Boulevard. The price of the property is set at a fair market value of $1 million. That money would go into the airport fund, according to the city. The proposals must all be for $1 million or more, according to the city. The RFP, Request for Proposals, requires that the lot be developed into a three-star or higher hotel facility with restaurant and coffee shop on site. The Request for Proposals for Airport Property states that the construction of a proposed development project must begin within 18 months of the date of closing of the purchase of the property. Also, if the proposer fails to develop the property under agreed-upon terms and conditions, then the title to the property shall remain with or automatically revert to the city. This article is entitled, Tailgate Wants to Host Bull Riding. Officials asked to build rodeo arena with bleachers, bucking chutes, backpen. By Stuart Doreen. If officials at the tailgate have their way, bull riding will be coming to the North Midland Entertainment Venue in October. An item on today's Midland City Council agenda calls for a temporary land use permit for a bull ride event. The tailgate officials want to have the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association sanctioned bull ride event on October 29th. The tailgate is requesting an increase of occupant load from 348 to 1,500 for the event. The bull ride is a PRCA-sanctioned bull ride according to agenda item documents, which will take place inside a completely enclosed area. The applicant is proposing to have a 100-foot by 100-foot rodeo area on the northeast side of the site, with bleachers enclosing the arena. On the east side of the proposed rodeo arena, an 80-foot by 100-foot bucking chutes back pen is proposed. The site plan currently shows 100 parking spaces, but there will be unmarked overflow parking throughout the site, according to the city. The applicant also states that more portable restrooms will be included for the event. Live music also will be allowed during all operating hours for the event, 11 a.m. to midnight. The tailgate is located at 4401 North Big Spring Street, southwest of the intersection at Loop 250 and Big Spring Street. This article is entitled, Blue Ribbon Administrator Aldrin Leads ECHS, by Trevor Hawes, Midland ISD. It's been quite a year for Renee Aldrin, Chancellor of Early College High School at Midland College. ECHS at MC achieved a score of 99 out of 100 on the Texas Education Administration accountability ratings. Her campus is now considered one of the best in the nation after it was named a National Blue Ribbon School by the U.S. Department of Education. Yet, when reflecting on these successes, Aldrin says she almost didn't answer her calling to work with children. After graduating from Paladuro High School, she enrolled in a program to become an X-ray technician. She quickly learned a career in medicine wasn't for her. Aldrin dropped out and took a break from school, but the urge to work with children nagged at her soul. "I had two cousins who were born deaf, blind, and mute," she said. "Their dad would bring them around, and my experiences with them were so profound that I just knew I needed to work with kids." A single mother, under pressure to provide for her children, she enrolled at West Texas State University and pursued a bachelor's in reading, with hopes to be a teacher. A job fair at WTSU landed her a teaching position with Midland ISD, where she spent the entirety of her 30 years and counting career in education. She revels in helping students navigate turbulent waters to which she relates personally. "We were poor growing up," Aldrin said. "My dad was a cook in the army, and my mother was a homemaker. We didn't have much, but we had each other and our family in Amarillo." Succeeding in school was also difficult for her. "Unlike my sister, who never had to crack open a book, I had to study very hard to make the grade," she said. "However, I persevered, and it's how I know that any child from any background can succeed in school." This knowledge pushed Aldrin to pursue a master's degree in counseling, that and her son. "When I walked the stage to get my bachelor's degree, I heard my son crying," Aldrin said. "I figured he got into trouble, but I was wrong. He was sad because I didn't graduate with the hood master's students get to wear. He said, 'Mommy, you work so hard. Why don't you get one of those?' I knew then that I had to go further in my education." Aldrin switched from teaching reading at Alamo to become a counselor. After 16 years, she moved on to Midland High, eventually becoming the associate principal. Then, an opportunity to impact students in a new way arose, leading ECHS at MC. ECHS at MC is a college preparatory school that operates in partnership with and on the campus of Midland College. Students are generally the first in their family to go to college, and they come from challenging socioeconomic circumstances, much like Aldrin. "We can rise above our circumstances through education to achieve our dreams," Aldrin said. "I wanted to help kids see that they could do that, and leading ECHS at MC gave me a unique chance to do so." Now, in her eighth year of chancellorship, the principal at ECHS at MC is called the chancellor to reflect the school's collegiate orientation. Practically every student she has guided has left MISD with a high school diploma and an associate degree, which gives them a two-year jump start on receiving their bachelor's. Many go on to pursue master's degrees. Last year, Aldrin was chosen by Phi Theta Kappa as a distinguished administrator, an honor made possible through recommendation by the students at Midland College. Many in the chapter are her own students at ECHS. "Being selected by the student body for an award is so special," she said. "It shows you're doing something right. And as educators, that's what we strive to do." Trevor Hawes is a communication specialist at Midland ISD. This article is entitled "ConocoPhillips Sponsors Small Business Program" by Mella McEwen. ConocoPhillips will host an information session for the Small Biz Builder program it is holding in partnership with Lyft Fund and local community organizations, including the Midland Chamber of Commerce. There will be a session 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Wednesday at the Concho Center 3. There will also be more sessions at 2 p.m. Wednesday in Monahans and Thursday in New Mexico. The program aims to support at least 75 small businesses in Eddy and Lee counties, New Mexico, and in Midland, Ector, Ward, and Winkler counties in Texas. The ConocoPhillips Small Biz Builder was uniquely designed to meet the needs of Permian Basin residents operating a small business or interested in starting their own business, Anna Pareda, Director of Business Support at Lyft Fund, told the Reporter-Telegram. Applications must commit to participating in three online sessions that will be held via Zoom from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. on November 1st, November 8th, and November 15th. Applicants must also be at least 18 years of age or older as of September 27th, have a business idea they are actively working on, or at least a half-owner of a business currently operating. Those successfully completing the program will receive access to one-on-one coaching sessions, development training in business model, marketing, and money management, and networking connections, as well as special access to capital considerations. Applications must be submitted by October 7th and can be submitted online at info.liftfund.com/acton/media/32698/conoco. Applications will be evaluated, and those selected will be notified for phone interviews by October 11th. This article is entitled ECISD Reports Multiple Incidents with Student Arrests by Mercedes Cordero. Since the start of the 2022-23 school year, Ector County ISD has reported 5 incidents that resulted in the arrest of 5 students. On August 24th, ECISD reported 2 incidents. A 7th grade student at Crockett Middle School was charged by Ector County ISD police after he allegedly made a statement about, quote, getting a gun and shooting kids, unquote. That same day, ECISD police investigated a fight between 2 Odessa High School students, one of whom was stabbed during the altercation. The student who was stabbed was transported to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. On September 9th, an 8th grade student at Bowie Middle School was arrested after assaulting a teacher. The incident, captured on video and shared on social media, shows the student arguing with the teacher about his cell phone. On September 14th, a 5th grade student at Ross Elementary was arrested after making threats against the school. On September 20th, an 8th grade student at Nimitz Middle School was arrested Tuesday for threatening to shoot a teacher. The student threatened the teacher for stepping in between 2 students who were arguing with each other. The district reported 3 separate incidents on September 21st. An Odessa High School sophomore was arrested on an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon charge. Ector County ISD also reported that 2 OHS students were involved in a fight before school started. One of the students pulled a knife, causing minor injuries to the second student. A 5th grade student at Ireland Elementary was charged by ECISD police after, quote, she pointed at students in her class as if she had a gun, telling them she would bring a gun to school and shoot them, unquote, according to a press release. Her teacher was alerted by fellow students and was reported immediately. A 6th grade student at Nimitz Middle School was also arrested after telling his friends he was, quote, planning to shoot up the school tomorrow. The district, in a September 20th press release, stated, our district takes all threats very seriously, investigates them fully, and will file charges against those who make such threats. Working together, schools and parents can curb this type of behavior. They also encouraged ECISD parents to have conversations with their children to help them understand that reacting in anger, violence, and making threats against others will lead to serious consequences. This article is called Project Literacy. Visit the Midland County Public Libraries to meet the featured authors for the 12th annual Project Literacy, a collaborative initiative that promotes literacy and a lifelong love of reading. Don't miss these free public events to meet this year's featured authors. Bring your own book or shop the Barnes & Noble pop-up shop for a copy to get signed. Rajani La Roca, Tuesday, October 4th, at 4 to 5:30 p.m., Centennial Library, 2503 West Loop 250. Rajani La Roca was born in India, raised in Kentucky, and now lives in the Boston area, where she practices medicine and writes award-winning books for young readers, including the Newbery Honor-winning middle grade novel In Verse, Red, White, and Whole. She's also been an omnivorous reader, and now she is an omnivorous writer of fiction and nonfiction, novels and picture books, prose and poetry. She finds inspiration in her family, her childhood, the natural world, math, science, and just about everywhere she looks. J.C. Cervantes, Wednesday, October 5th at 4 to 6 p.m., Centennial Library, 2503 West Loop 250. J.C. is the New York Times best-selling author of books for children and young adults. Her books have appeared on national lists, including the American Booksellers Association New Voices, Barnes & Noble's Best Young Reader Books, as well as Amazon's Best Books of the Month. She has earned multiple awards and recognitions, including the New Mexico Book Award and the Zia Book Award. Ray Ripple, Thursday, October 6th at 4 to 6 p.m. Library at the Plaza, Downtown Library, 301 West Missouri Avenue. Ray Ripple is a world-renowned metal artist, television personality, stunt writer, and now author. Her work has been featured in magazines, television shows, and documentary films. Ray has a passion for sparking the younger generation's interest in all the opportunities the trades have to offer. Project Literacy is presented by Midland County Public Libraries, Public Library Foundation, Wells Fargo, Basin PBS, and the Midland Reporter Telegram. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled Dregs of U.S. Oil Patch in Demand by David Weth and Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. In the hydrocarbon-rich fields of Texas, natural gas was always treated like the dregs that crews had to deal with as they pulled oil out of the ground. The two often emerged from wellheads together, and so for decades drillers would simply burn off the gas or sell it at cost. Oil, and all the riches that came with it, was always the big prize. Now, in a sign of just how much Russia's invasion of Ukraine has thrown global energy markets into disarray, it's natural gas, not oil, that's becoming more coveted in U.S. shale fields. With Europe desperately seeking alternatives to Russian gas that powered furnaces and electricity grids, prices are skyrocketing, and U.S. drillers are scrambling to extract, liquefy, and ship more of it overseas. U.S. energy companies are expanding the search for gas at the fastest pace since 1992. Domestic prices for the fuel already have climbed more than 80% this year, and the bullish drivers don't appear likely to fade anytime soon. Record domestic production isn't keeping up with surging demand at home and overseas. Prices have climbed even more dramatically in Europe as Russian President Vladimir Putin clamps down on gas shipments to nations opposed to his war in Ukraine, all against the backdrop of rising global competition for a cleaner alternative to coal, as well as the increasing drag on power supplies amid the rise of electric cars. European buyers in recent weeks were paying the equivalent of more than $90 per million British thermal units for gas. Convert that energy into crude, and that's about $550 a barrel, more than six times the price American drillers can command for their oil. Little wonder that U.S. gas drilling has soared more than 50% this year. Meanwhile, U.S. oil drilling has risen only 25% this year, according to Baker Hughes Company, a reflection of the much weaker performance of the underlying commodity relative to gas. Benchmark U.S. crude prices have advanced less than 3% since the end of 2021. The commodities folks have somewhat ignored the big growth that we've seen in the gas rig count versus last year, Leo Mariani, an Austin-based analyst at MKM Holdings, LLC, said in a phone interview. It seems like the oil's gotten hit hard over concerns over the economy recently, and gas has quietly just done really well on a relative basis this year. Oil, for decades, has been a far more profitable target for drillers relative to gas. But that axiom has been turned on its head, as the advent of the U.S. gas export sector enabled American companies to capitalize on overseas price spikes, heretofore beyond their reach. The math is compelling. The forward prices on which explorers-based drilling decisions have advanced much more dramatically for gas than oil this year. Gas to be delivered 2 years from now has climbed 50% from the end of last year, compared with a 5.8% rise for U.S. crude over the same time span. European and Asian benchmark prices may not fully incorporate the threat of severe weather, further Russian natural gas supplier suppression, and a prolonged conflict in Ukraine, said Talen Custer, BI analyst. European gas shortage may be sufficient to get through this winter, but inventories could be extremely low come March, putting the region in a similar dilemma in 2023 as it seeks to refill inventories with costly LNG amid restricted Russian-piped gas. Some of the biggest U.S. shale specialists are shifting more of their production mix to gas at the expense of crude. Callon Petroleum Company, Continental Resources Inc., and Pioneer Natural Resources Company are among drillers that have switched more than 10% of their overall output to gas from oil, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. There are a number of factors at play, including a crackdown on so-called flaring in remote regions, as well as the natural process whereby aging wells pump out a greater concentration of gas versus crude as time goes by. This article is entitled "Stogner Endorses Warford in Texas Oil Regulator Race" by Philip Jankowski, the Dallas Morning News. A former Republican candidate for the Texas Railroad Commission has endorsed the Democrat running in November, Luke Warford. The nod from Sarah Stogner, who drew attention in the GOP primary this year after appearing nearly nude in a TikTok video, could give Warford a boost against incumbent Railroad Commissioner Wayne Christian, who is running for a second term. "I'm officially endorsing Luke because I'm hopeful that people that believed in me will trust my judgment and say, I really think Luke is a better candidate than Wayne," Stogner told the Dallas Morning News. Warford faces an uphill battle against Christian. No Democrat has won a statewide office in Texas since 1994. And while the three members of the Railroad Commission play an important role as the chief regulators of Texas's gargantuan oil and gas industry, the down-ballot race often struggles to grab the voters' attention. Stogner, however, was able to break through when she posted the video of herself wearing little more than boots, a cowboy hat, and pasties while atop a West Texas pump jack. Her gambit worked, garnering headlines from national and local publications and propelling her to second place in a five-way Republican primary. Christian beat Stogner handily in the May 24th runoff with 65% of the vote. Stogner endorsed Warford after the former Democratic Party operative visited her at the West Texas ranch where she lives. On Thursday, Stogner posted a TikTok video of her and Warford discovering gurgling oil and gas coming from a plugged well on the ranch. She said, "Warford will put Texas first. I had hundreds of thousands of people vote for me in the Republican primary," Stogner said. "If I can get those hundreds of thousands of people to trust me and show up and vote for Luke, because it's what's best for Texas energy, I might actually be able to make a difference." "I'm honored to have Sarah's endorsement," Warford said in a written statement. Her campaign highlighted some of the most egregious challenges at the Texas Railroad Commission, from emissions to the grid to the future of Texas energy. "The Texas Railroad Commission has failed Texans, and I know they are ready to vote in new leadership in November." This article is entitled "Manchin Appeals for Support on Energy Permitting Bill" by Jennifer A. DeLuey, Bloomberg. Washington. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin is still campaigning for votes on his plan to fast-track energy projects, while expressing confidence he'll win enough bipartisan backing to pass the permitting legislation. Manchin, speaking on Fox News Sunday, appealed to Republicans and Democrats to align behind his measure, which seeks to speed up the approval process for both fossil fuel and clean energy projects. "This is a chance in a lifetime for us to have energy independence and security, while making sure we take care of American people with lower energy prices, producing more oil, producing more gas," Manchin said. "We have to have permitting reform if you're going to deliver it." Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer had promised to include the permitting proposal in must-pass government funding legislation set for a vote this week, as part of a deal securing Manchin's support for President Joe Biden's climate, health, and spending bill that passed on a party-line vote in August. While Manchin's bill has won the backing of his fellow West Virginian Republican Senator Shelley Moore Capito, other Republicans have been wary of lending their support, since it was critical to greasing the Inflation Reduction Act they opposed. Manchin on Sunday implored Republicans to put that aside and embrace permitting changes they've long sought. "This is the most important thing that we can do today, and it's the most critical problem we have in front of us, which is energy independence and security," Manchin said. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, September 27th. Ben David Crowell, Holly Lake Ranch. Ben David Crowell went to be with his Lord and Savior on September 20th. Graveside service, 11 a.m. Wednesday, September 28th, at Pickwick McAdams Cemetery. Visitation, 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, September 27th, at Greenwood. He was born of the union between his father, Ben Lee Crowell, and mother, Edna Minor Crowell, on July 22, 1954, in Wichita Falls. He graduated high school at Midland Lee High School and attended Texas State University. Upon his retirement, he moved to East Texas, where he engaged in his passion for fishing. Ben is preceded in death by his father, Ben Lee Crowell. Ben David Crowell is survived by his mother, Edna Minor Crowell, brother Brian Lee Crowell, and wife Polly, his son, Ben Lee Crowell, and wife Kate, son Clinton David Crowell and wife Kara, as well as several grandchildren and nieces and nephews. Mary Ann Sergo. Mary Ann D'Arcangelo Sergo passed away on September 16th following a stroke. She was born on January 11, 1930, in New Orleans, Louisiana, to Sicilian immigrants. She married Manuel Sergo on September 30, 1950. She was preceded in death by her husband, her parents Santo and Anna Benvenuto D'Arcangelo, and her five older brothers, Joe, Philip, Benny, Sal, and Vic. She is survived by her five children, Sharon, Manny, Kay, Victor, Charla, Brian, Suzanne, and Eric, Nancy, as well as 13 grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to our mother's favorite charity, St. Jude's Children's Hospital, or Midland Montessori School. A funeral service for Mary will be held Saturday, October 1st, at 10 a.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street, followed by a burial at 11 a.m. Mary Ellen Dorchester. Mary Ellen Dorchester of Midland passed away peacefully in her home on September 24th at the age of 90. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, September 28th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be Thursday, September 29th at 2 p.m. at First Baptist Church Chapel. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Mary was born in 1932 in Abilene to James and Connie Feltz. She is survived by her two children, Brian Dorchester and wife Kathy of Aledo, and Diana Barker and her husband Danny of Midland, as well as 6 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren. Mary is preceded in death by Dave Dorchester, her husband. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Phyllis Cappadonna Short. After a brief illness, Phyllis Cappadonna Short passed away unexpectedly on Friday, September 23rd, with her husband and daughter by her side. She was born on December 27, 1947, in Port Arthur, Texas, to Margaret and Philip Cappadonna. The family moved to Midland when Phyllis was 6 weeks old. Phyllis is preceded in death by her parents and sister Jean Cappadonna Nichols. Survivors include her husband of 52 years, John, daughter Gina Short Friedman and son-in-law Ben of Midland, 2 grandchildren, brother John Cappadonna and wife Jane of Midland, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. Her memorial service will be held at First Baptist Church of Midland on Friday, September 30th at 10 a.m. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that memorials be directed to the Bynum School in Midland or an organization of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be sent at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Juanita Marie O'Hara. Juanita Marie O'Hara, age 94, of Midland, passed away September 19th. Juanita was born April 16th, 1928. A public visitation for Juanita was held Sunday, September 25th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. A rosary took place Sunday, September 25th, at 7 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. A chapel service was held Monday, September 26th at 10 a.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church, and burial will occur Monday, September 26th at 11 a.m. at 4616 North Big Spring Street. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com. Mickey Jackson. Mickey Jackson of Odessa died September 26th in Odessa. A funeral followed by burial will be held on September 29th at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland.
Lawsuit filed following alleged dog attack. A West Odessa woman has filed a lawsuit against her neighbors, alleging their negligence led to her 11-year-old son being attacked by 3 of their dogs. According to the lawsuit, which was held in the 70th Ector County District Court, Eduardo Cy Portillo was playing in the backyard of his home on La Bonita Drive on April 26, 2021, when Robert Lucero Jr. and Sonia Reza let 3 boxers out of their chain-link pen and they immediately ran and attacked him. The boy suffered serious lacerations on both legs that required medical and surgical intervention, according to the lawsuit. Karen Portillo's attorney, Spencer Dobbs, said Reza came to the boy's rescue and was also hurt during the attack. She and Lucero surrendered their dogs to the authorities, and the dogs were euthanized after being quarantined for several days to ensure they didn't have rabies, he said. The boy had wounds extending from his calves up to his thighs, Dobbs said. Dobbs said neighbors told investigators the dogs had acted aggressively toward them on prior occasions, and Lucero admitted he knew that too. According to the lawsuit, Lucero is guilty of negligent conduct for failing to confine the animals in a secure location, failing to properly restrain the animals, and failing to properly train the animals. The boy has visible scarring and emotional scarring too, Dobbs said. The family is seeking monetary damages of more than $200,000, but less than $1 million because of the medical expenses incurred by the family, but also because of the physical and mental pain caused by the attacks, according to the lawsuit. The law firm of Doyle and Seal Bach, in responding to the lawsuit, entered a general denial of the allegations. The firm also said the couple have no actual or constructive knowledge of the three boxer breed dogs' assumed dangerous propensities. The firm also noted that if the jury finds the boy was more than 50% responsible for his injuries, or if he voluntarily exposed himself to any alleged danger he knew about, he wouldn't be able to recover any damages. Alleged serial rapist indicted. An Ector County grand jury has indicted an Odessa man who is accused of being a serial kidnapper and rapist. According to the indictment, Javier Martinez Arias, 38, is accused of kidnapping one woman in April and two other women in July in order to sexually abuse the women. In each instance, Arias took the women with the intent to prevent her liberation by secreting or holding her in a place where she was not likely to be found. The first attack allegedly happened April 26th, and the other two attacks reportedly occurred 9 days apart in July. Arias is scheduled to be arraigned October 10th in the 70th Ector County District Court on 3 counts of aggravated kidnapping, sexual abuse, 2 counts of attempted aggravated sexual assault, and 1 count of aggravated sexual assault. Arias has been in the Ector County Jail since his arrest July 20th on surety bonds totaling $6 million. Arias was arrested near Pagewood Avenue and University Boulevard shortly after one of the women reported she was almost raped at a location off South Grandview Avenue. Deputies pulled Arias over after spotting him in a car matching the suspect's vehicle, and he was positively identified as a suspect. During the course of their investigation, deputies learned of the two other potential victims. Commissioners to hear ECUD projects. Ector County Utility District representatives are scheduled to speak on Tuesday to the Commissioners' Court about updates on current projects. Mike Gardner, the commissioner for Precinct 1, on Monday morning said he wants this to become a regular habit for ECUD representatives. This agenda and more will be discussed during a regularly scheduled meeting at 10 a.m. at the Ector County Administration Building Annex, located in Room 120 at 1010 East 8th Street in Odessa. We will probably start having them come in not every commissioner's court, but every other commissioner's court, to give us an update on their projects and how they are getting along with them, Gardner said. We have work that we have to come behind them and do, like fix roads. The updates will continue to grow in importance since the commissioner's court voted during its annual budget meetings in early August to award $10 million of ARPA funds to ECUD. Gardner said, ECUD's two big projects that are currently taking place are on Tripp Street and on 42nd Street between Farm to Market Road, 1936, and Moss Avenue. With as many projects that we have coming up with the ARPA money, it will be a good thing to give a report every 2 weeks to keep people informed on what's going on and the status of each project, Gardner said. On Tuesday's agenda, Gardner also requested for the court to discuss a declaration of local disaster or a resolution to secure the border. Gardner said Ector County is a hub for drug trafficking and human trafficking. Gardner said he wants to make sure the Ector County Sheriff's Office and Odessa Police Department have the ability to receive state or federal funds so the burden doesn't fall on the local taxpayers. We want to do this to allow us to be able to get any type of funds from the state or federal to help law enforcement to combat drugs and human trafficking, Gardner said. The court is also scheduled to consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding a proposed resolution for Safe Place, recognizing the month of October as Domestic Awareness Month, and organizing the county judge and county commissioners to sign. To receive a presentation from Dr. Scott Murray and the ConEctor Task Force regarding state funding options to expand broadband to residents in Ector County. to approve a proclamation designating October 2nd through 8th, 2022 as National 4-H Week and authorize the county judge and county commissioners to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to hire Sarah Moran for the County Extension Horticultural Agent to be shared by Ector County and Midland County. To discuss, consider, and take any necessary action on the 2022-2023 budget for Emergency Communication District of Ector County and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve issuing 15 county phones for building maintenance employees for the implementation of the new Asset Essentials Upgrade Facility Management Software. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to transfer two abandoned trailers to be utilized by the Sheriff's Office. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the 2023 Sheriff's and Constable's fees. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding options on total loss designation per travelers regarding Unit 1224, Ector County Sheriff's Office, 2021, Police, Chevrolet Tahoe 4x2, License Number Texas 1412567, VIN Number 1GBSCLED 6MR41. 8663, and requesting to declare this item as salvage property and dispose of said item per section 263.151 and remove from county inventory and to authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve United Healthcare's proposed schedule for excess loss coverage and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the purchase of a 2022 John Deere 310SL loader backhoe with attachments for the Public Works Department in the amount of $148,200 from sales tax account 005-810-5505 and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the purchase of a 2022 Ford Explorer for the Public Works Department in the amount of $38,781.25 from sales tax account 005-810-5505 and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to secure bids to remove and install new roofs of Ector Courthouse at 300 North Grand Street and the Administration Annex at 1010 East 8th Street and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the SaaS software agreement for Tyler Encode and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve Flock Group Incorporated Additional Services Agreement and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the contract proposal for Offender Watch and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding an awarded grant from T-Mobile utilizing ECF Emergency Connectivity Funds from the FCC and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to accept Travelers Indemnity Company Insurance Renewal Contract in partnership with USI Insurance Services for the 2022-2023 policy term comprised of the following coverages: Property, Inland Marine, Commercial General Liability, Commercial Auto Liability, $10,000 deductible, Commercial Auto Physical Damage, Commercial Umbrella Excessive Liability, Employee Benefits Liability, Law Enforcement Liability, Excessive Law Enforcement Liability, Public Entity Management Liability, UAV Drone Hull and Liability, Public Entity Employment Related Practices Liability, and Crime Cyber Network Security and Privacy and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding current financial liability of comp time in county departments. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding change order number 1 for the CTIF Seal Coat Project 2022 and authorize the county judge and other county officials and employees to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. To consider, discuss, award, reject, or take any other actions regarding change order number 3 for the West Apple Street Road Project and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the Planning and Development Department's permit for installation on County Right-of-Way Pipeline and Utility Crossing Agreement. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on 3 Jewels Subdivision Precinct 1 being a plat of 10-acre tract located in Section 24, Block 41, T2S, TNP, Rye, Survey, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on Penta Court, Precinct 1, a subdivision of 5 acres in Section 25, Block 44, T2S, TNP, Rye, Rye Survey, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Permian shooting post causes concern. A Snapchat post of someone holding a gun with a note saying they were going to shoot a specific student who attends Permian High School has people concerned. According to a Facebook post, the person who made the post specifically said a shooting would take place Monday, September 26th or Tuesday, September 27th. The Odessa Police Department sent out an alert saying that Ector County ISD Police became aware of the post September 21st and immediately began an investigation and notified the family of the boy, who was named so everyone involved could take precautions, the OPD alert said. Along with the OPD, ECISD Police are continuing to investigate and taking steps to ensure safety at Permian High School. So far, ECISD Chief Communications Officer Mike Atkins said ECISD police have not been able to substantiate the post. There is no source and no origin for the message. TxDOT meeting focuses on Highway 115. The Odessa District of Texas Department of Transportation has scheduled a virtual public meeting regarding proposed improvements to Highway 115 in Andrews, Ward, and Winkler counties, a press release stated. The virtual public meeting is scheduled to begin at 5 p.m. Wednesday. Following the virtual public meeting, the presentation will remain available for viewing through October 14th. The proposed project covers 47 miles and would go from Spur 247 near Piute in Ward County to Highway 127 in Andrews County. This project is in the planning stage. No construction funding or construction timeline have been established yet. While nothing is planned within cities in this project, the project consists of the following. Widen the rural sections of Highway 115 and make it a four-lane divided highway with 2 lanes in each direction. Include a center median. Include turn lanes and acceleration lanes in selected locations throughout the project area. The proposed improvements would require additional right-of-way. 2 non-residential structures would be displaced. To attend the virtual meeting, go to TxDOT.gov and keyword search SH115 South. The meeting will open at 5 p.m. Wednesday and be available through October 14th. The meeting will consist of a pre-recorded video presentation and will include both audio and visual components. The virtual public meeting webpage will feature maps and exhibits for the public to review and comment on. The public may submit comments using any of the following methods. Submit online comment form found at www.txdot.gov, keyword search SH115 South, email SH115 South at entechhou.com. Mail to Community Awareness Services, Attention, SH115 South, 397 North Sam Houston Parkway East, Suite 125, Houston, Texas, 77060, 2426. Comment must be received or postmarked by Friday, October 14th to be included in the official record of this virtual public meeting. If you need additional information, please call the project team at 281-820-7413 or email sh115south@entechhou.com. to ask questions and access project material during the project development process. Following the virtual public meeting, TxDOT will consider public input received, collect and analyze additional data, develop improvement options, and may request additional public input at future public meetings. TxDOT is committed to developing this project in collaboration with the community in a way that meets the project goals while minimizing community impacts. BRI students awarded $46,000 in scholarships. Seven graduates of the Borderlands Research Institute at Sol Ross State University have been selected to receive $46,500 in scholarships from seven different sources, including the first ever scholarship awarded from the Wes and Victoria Bannister Scholarship and the Wayne and Joanne Moore Endowment Scholarship, a press release stated. The Wes and Victoria Bannister Scholarship was established by the Bannisters family after their passing. The Bannisters were longtime residents of Alpine who loved the natural beauty and ecological diversity of the region. The Wayne and Joanne Moore Scholarship was established by the Wayne and Joanne Moore Charitable Foundation in Midland. Wayne and Joanne placed considerable emphasis on education and saw it as a path to a fulfilling life. We are very grateful to the Bannisters and Moore families and their support of our students that will be felt far into the future. Dr. Lewis Haverson, who is the Dan Allen Hughes Jr. BRI Endowment Director at Sol Ross State University, stated in the press release, "Our students are working hard to finish up their degrees, and many take out loans as they work on their classwork and thesis projects. These scholarships are an investment in the future, and we are grateful for the support of these fine organizations and donors." Scholarship source students: Wes and Victoria Bannister Scholarship, Caleb Hughes. Wes and Victoria Bannister Scholarship, Olivia Gray. Wayne and Joanne Moore Endowment Scholarship, Maya Ressler. Virginia Matthews Law Scholarship, Leanna Lily Morin. Franklin and Virginia Law Scholarship, Brooke Bowman. West Texas Safari Club Scholarship, Erin O'Connell. Dan L. Duncan Scholarship, Houston Safari Club, Preston McGee. Dan L. Duncan Scholarship, Houston Safari Club, Olivia Gray. Dan L. Duncan Scholarship, Houston Safari Club, Erin O'Connell. Dan L. Duncan Scholarship, Houston Safari Club, Maya Ressler. Wildlife Graduate Student Scholarship of the West Texas Section of the Wildlife Society, Olivia Gray. OC poised to approve tax rate. The Odessa College Board of Trustees will consider approving the 2022 tax rate at their meeting set for 6:30 today in the Zant Community Room in the Salisbury Campus Center. The proposed rate is 0.188643 per $100 valuation. That's a decrease of 6.5% over last year's tax rate. Last year's tax rate was 0.201723 per $100 valuation. The 2022 no new tax rate is 0.177210 per $100 valuation. The no new revenue rate, previously known as the effective rate, is the tax rate you have to assess to receive the same amount of revenue as the previous year. At a September 20th workshop, Board Chair Gary Johnson said most of the valuation this year came from minerals and new construction. Two tax rate hearings were held, but no one from the public attended or spoke. Trustees also will consider a tax abatement for GCC, which produces cement, concrete, aggregates, and innovative products for the construction industries in Mexico, the United States, Latin America, and Canada, its website said. Also on the agenda are consider and approve First Basin Credit Union naming agreement, a continuing education update, institutional effectiveness report, Vision 2030 Plus update. The President's report includes the Drive to Success kickoff, Wrangler Roundup, 30 for 30 Fitness Challenge, and the Permian Basin Fair.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.